We're on Daf Tesvav Amid Beis. We started the Mishnah on the bottom of Tesvav Amid Aleph yesterday. And the Mishnah records a machlokes between the Tanakama and Rabbi Meir about the status of an animal which is called a Dover Sheish Bo Ruach Chaim and whether or not it can serve as a valid lechi. So imagine you tie up a cow to the side of the entranceway into a mavui, and the cow is there, and it has the function as a lechi, according to Tanakama. And Rabbi Meir says no. According to Rabbi Meir, you cannot consider something that has a life force as a valid partition. You need something that doesn't have a life force of its own. And now we go over to the question of Tumah. What's the status of an animal? As a general principle, animals do not receive Tumah. However, the exception to that is the case of what's called a golel. Golel means if, let's say, the animal was placed on top of a corpse, then, well, for example, a tomb. Right, let's say you had a burial, somebody was buried, and the animal got on top of the tomb, T-O-M-B, and it was removed from the tomb. The question is, does it have the same tumah status as a golel? So what's the tumah status of a golel? Because the Tanakama here says, mitame mishum golel. That means that once this animal was a covering, so to speak, over a tomb, then now it transmits the tumah of a golel. And the tumah of a golel is such that if you find other objects or human beings that are inside the same oel as this tomb stone, this golel, then the golel will transmit the tumah, which is called a tomb covering, that's a golel, as if it were a dead body. And that's going to apply now to the behemoth, to this animal, according to the Tanakama, that functioned as a covering over a tomb, so to speak. In other words, the purpose of a golel, which is a covering over a tomb, is a kind of a mechitza. And the Tanakama holds that even a live force animal with a living force could also be considered a machitza, as we saw in the case of Lechi, and now also we're seeing it in the case of a covering over a grave. That's kind of a machitza over the grave. But Rabbi Meir Metayer, that's on the top here of Tesvav Amid Beis, because he holds that something that has a life force to it cannot be a machitza. And if it's not a machitza, then it doesn't have the status of a golel. So even though I took this animal that was once on top of a tomb, and now I moved it away, it's not a tomb covering, because a tomb covering means a tomb machitza. And a live being that has its own life force cannot possibly be a machitza. Then the Mishnah goes on to a different discussion about the status of living beings, and that is a get. Can you write a get on the back of an animal and give that animal over to the wife, and that would serve as a valid divorce? And here we have a machlokes once again about the status of an animal. According to Tanakama Kosvin Olav Gite Noshim, you could have a valid get that was written on a living being. Rabbi Yossi Haglili Posel. Rabbi Yossi Haglili says it's invalid. And now, we're going to start the Gemara. So we are two lines down from the top of Tesvav Amid Beis. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Dover Sheyesh Bo Ruach Chaim, Ein Osim Oso. According to Rabbi Meir, anything that has a life force to it cannot be designated as neither a dofen for a sukkah, because each wall of a sukkah has the status of mechitza, and a live being cannot be a mechitza, according to Rabbi Meir, v'lo lechi l'mavui. So you can't be matir, tiltul, and a mavui with a live animal as a lechi, no. V'lo pasin libiro. So you remember we had that well that was a rishus hayachid, and in order to get the water out of the well, which is surrounded by rishus harabim, we have to set up pase biros, right? Those pasim, those pillars on a 90 degree angle on each of the four sides, and now we want to use an animal for that purpose. No, says Rabbi Meir, the animal cannot be a mechitza, and if it can't function as mechitza, then it's not a pas to be matir the biros, these wells. And furthermore, v'lo golel lekever, an alive animal, even if it was on top of a tomb and it covers the tomb, nevertheless, it's not a mechitza. And the tumas golel only applies to the mechitza that's placed as a permanent covering over a tomb. And therefore, this animal, according to Rabbi Meir, although it did climb on top of a tomb, can never assume the status of a cover over a tomb, which is a kind of a mechitza, because a live being can never be a mechitza. And finally, the Braisa concludes with the machlokas as far as get is concerned. Mishum, Rabbi Yossi Aglil Omru, af ein kosvin olav gite noshim. That if you write a bill of divorce on the animal's back, it will be invalid. And at this point, the Gemara goes into what I would call Masechta Gittin. And it's interesting that of all the different issues that came up as far as the status of a live being, and we had Rabbi Meir and the Tanakhama, the Gemara is now focused on Rabbi Yossi Aglili, to know why is it that Rabbi Yossi Aglili, against the Tanakhama, against the Chachamim, invalidates a get on a live being. My time of the Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now, by way of introduction, we'll read a pasuk in Parshas Ki Tetzé in Dvarim Perek Chav Daled, and it says there, V'kosav la sefer krisus v'nasan biyada. So the Torah says he should write a sefer, a book. Usually a book is a scroll, usually made of parchment. And it's krisus. Krisus means to sever a relationship. And v'nosan biyada, after this parchment was written up, with all the terms of get, of severance, then he gives it over to the woman and places it in her hand. Now, if we take the word sefer literally, and as we said before, sefer means a parchment, a document or a scroll, then hence we're going to understand Rabbi Yossi. The Sanya Sefer. Now, wait a second. If you're saying that it's got to be a Sefer, are you telling me that the only way I could write a get is on a cloth? Is on parchment? And by the way, just for the sake of mentioning this, our Gittin are not necessarily written on parchment. You could write a get on a piece of paper. You could write a get on a leaf. So, Ein li ela sefer. If I take the word sefer literally, all I could derive is parchment. And there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi who identifies a parchment as a sefer. Let me just see if I can find that pasuk. Just 1 second. There's a perek lamed vav in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, which we read as one of the haftoras. We read it actually pretty recently. It's Baruch ben Neria. And ani kosev ala sefer bidyo. So here's the word sefer, and you're writing on the sefer with ink. And that sefer is a reference to a megillah that's written on cloth. And there, in the same chapter, it says, Acharei Sarof HaMelches HaMegila. So that Sefer of Baruch Ben Neria is a Megila. And a Megila is a klaf. So we have, in any event, a source for assuming that the word Sefer means a klaf. And since the Torah says, V'kosev lo Sefer, it should mean that the only thing that's kosher for get would be a Sefer that's written on klaf. And we know that that's not so. Is minayin l'rabos kol dover. So now we can expand it to include anything. You know, wherever you can write the terms of the severance and it's visible, give that to an isha, give it to the wife. And Talmud Lomar, this ribui to expand the sefer krisus from just simply parchment to any material on which the get is written, is because the Torah says v'kasav la sefer krisus. Now, what's bothering this brisa about v'kasav la sefer krisus? When I read the pasuk v'kasav la, he should write for her a book of severance, I thought it was pretty good. I didn't see any problems. But apparently the Brisa says that it should have said, V'nosan Sefer Krisus Biyada. Obviously, if he's giving her a Sefer Krisus, a scroll on which there's the terms of severance are written out, obviously it must have been written. It must have been created. You can't have a Sefer Krisus, you know, with the names of the husband, the wife that came from Shemayim, that miraculously self-created. So there must have been a ksiva. So why did the Torah say, V'kasav lo Sefer Krisus V'nasan biyada? Why not just start from the end? V'nasan Sefer Krisus biyada. And the answer is, V'kasav lo is a ribui. Mikol makom. And it's expanding the validity, the possibilities, or the scope of validity of a get to include any material. So whatever material you write the get on, that's included under v'kasav lo. Yeah, but wait a second. The Torah says sefer. So there's a contradiction here. Sefer, we said, based on Yirmiyahu HaNavi, means that it's a scroll on parchment. V'kasav lo is an extra ribui to teach me on anything. Al kol davar. So how do I reconcile this? And that's the Gemara's next question. The Brisa asks, V'im kein, if you can write the get on any material, is matam alomer sefer? Why did the Torah write sefer to confuse me? There must be some miut here. There must be some exclusion. It's not kol davar. It's because of law, but the exception is something that's not at all similar to sefer. So sefer is going to give me is going to reveal to me what kind of kol davar could be included on the get. Oh, sefer means it's got to be similar to sefer. Not that the material was a klaf, a parchment, but rather davar she'ein bo ruach chayim. The word sefer here is paradigmic of something that has no life to it, no life force. An inanimate object. To the exclusion of something else as well. So the first quality or descriptive element of sefer is ein bo ruach chaim. Number two, eino ochel. A sefer is certainly not an edible. You get a really bad stomach ache if you eat a sefer. And when we expand the scope of the material on which a get is written on based on v'kasav lo kol davar, it's got to be kol davar that's similar to sefer, that has these two elements to it. It's not an ochel, it's not a foodstuff. And number two, it's not a davar she'esh bo ruach chaim. Af kol davar she'ein bo ruach chaim ve'en ochel. And therefore the pasuk sefer is coming to exclude that which is alive. That's not a sefer. Or that which is edible, that's not a sefer. And therefore a get that was written, according to Rabbi Yossi, on a living animal is completely invalid, because it's not at all similar to Sefer. Now the Tanakama, the Chachamim, they're of the opinion that you could write a get even on an animal. I don't know about a foodstuff, but on an animal. So the Gemara asks Rabbanon, they disagree with Rabbi Yossi, and they hold you could write a get and it's valid on an animal. What are they going to do with the drush of Sefer? And the answer is, the Rabbanon say that the word Sefer here has nothing to do with the material on which the get is being written. Not at all. According to Chachamim, you've missed, Rabbi Yossi, you've missed the boat, you've missed the interpretation of the word Sefer. You're building a whole thesis on Sefer meaning it's got to be parchment, it can't be a living being, it can't be a foodstuff, different materials, this, that, no. No, no, no. That's not what the word Sefer means. In the context of a Kosovla Sefer, the word Sefer means Sipur Dvarim. Okay, let's see what Sipur Dvarim means. Miksiv ba Sefer, if the word Sefer was referring to the material on which the get is written, then add a base, which it doesn't have, and it should have said because of ba Sefer, should be written in a Sefer, and that Sefer is the object on which the get is written, the material, and then given to the Isha. But no, 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 no. It says only Sefer. It doesn't say Bas Sefer. And therefore, the Torah is not describing the object that's being given, but rather the writings which are included in the concept of get. And that's called Sefer Ksiv L'Sfiras Dvarim B'Al Mahudiyasa. The Torah is telling us and defining what should be written in the get. The get is supposed to be telling a story. And the story is about Croesus, about the fact that henceforth we are severing our marriage relationship. The Torah is not limiting the material on which you write the get, but rather the Torah is telling you what has to be written on the get, and the Torah is defining and describing that which is written on the get as Sipur Dvarim. And Sipur Dvarim is one of the main concepts in all of Masechet Gittin and Hechsher Gittin, and we need a Sipur Dvarim. Okay? So, for example, if let's say the get would be written as a description of what happened between, and let's name them, we'll call it Shimon and Rachel. That's not Sipur Dvarim. Sipur Dvarim means that I, Shimon, am hereby divorcing my wife. You've got to tell a story. It's what I would call Edus. It's testimony. Tell the story of the get. And whatever details have to be included in that testimony, they have to be written down in the get. It's not enough just to write, well, here is a get. And I, the undersigned, I'm giving my approval to write a get. No, no, no. It's got to be Sipur Dvarim. The names have to be written clearly and explicitly. The time that it takes place, just like when you testify, at what moment in time did you see Reuven kill Shimon? The place, the location. I remember, in my youth, I was studying the laws of Gittin. I took a whole year's course with Rav Cohen, Eliezer Lippman Cohen, all of the Shalom. He was an expert on Gittin, and he taught us a course in Yeshiva University for a full year at the Gruss Center. And I remember that he told us that the city of Columbus in Ohio is situated on a river, and we're not exactly sure how to write the name of the river, and we needed a Mesorah, that's part of Sfiris Dvarim. And I remember when it came to the names of Get, there was a, we watched a Get in the Beis Din in Yerushalayim. Again, I'm telling you a story from over 40 years ago. And the woman was a Gioris. She was French. And her name was Genevieve. And I remember the rabbis for a half hour drilled her how to pronounce the name Genevieve. Is it Genevieve, Genevieve, Genevieve? Until they finally decided with many different options how to write the name of this woman. All this is included in Sfiras Dvarim. Because the Sfiras Dvarim has to be a self-contained testimony, a story that tells us about him and her and the get and the divorce and the location and the time and everything else. All that is derived from Sfiras Dvarim. And the Rabbanim say that the word Sefer here does not mean Ba-Sefer, to tell you which materials are valid for writing the get, but rather telling you what and how to write the get. It's got to be Sfiras Dvarim. So now the Gemara asks the following. Okay, you've explained the coin to Rabban on the word Sefer, but keep in mind that Rabbi Yossi Aglili had another drush in this pasuk, V'kasav La, and V'kasav La came as a ribui to include other materials other than parchment. Is Rabban and High this pasuk, quote-unquote, because of law, my darshi bay? Right, we have no restriction, according to the Chacham, in terms of the material on which the get could be written. Hence, even a live animal could be the object of the get. So what are the Rabbanim going to do with because of law, which Rabbi Yosef Glili used to validate other surfaces other than parchment? And the Gemara answers, ahu, that pasuk of a kos of law mi boile, he needs it to teach me that b'ksiva miskaresh v'ena miskaresh is b'kesef. You know, you might have thought, it's in a way out hava mina here, that give money to a woman and you can effectuate get. Now, where in the context, in the orbit of relationship between man and a woman, does the Torah validate kesef? Anybody know? All right, don't all answer at once. When you marry a woman, you give her kesef. And paradoxically, we have a havamina that just like if you marry a woman, you give her kesef, well, pay her off for a divorce. And why? Salkadak, I mean, I would have thought, hold the iskash yitziyah v'avaya. The Torah says, v'yotzav ahoysa. Li'ish acher in Parshas Ki Teitze, which means she goes out and then she gets married to another man. So in that same breath, the Torah speaks about both divorce and marriage, and that gives us the hekesh between Yitzio, which is divorce, and Havaya, which is marriage. And if I might think, Ma Havaya b'kesef, just like marriage is effectuated by giving money, is so to af Yitzio b'kesef, divorce likewise can be effectuated by giving money. Kamash Malan, therefore the Torah has to tell me, because of law, Sefer Krisis. Don't think about giving her money. That's not going to effectuate a divorce. What you have to do is you have to write a Sefer Krisis, and once that bill of divorce is complete, then you hand it over to the woman, and that clinches the gerush. For Rabbi Yossi Aglili, hi svar minole, and from whence does Rabbi Yossi Aglili derive this legal requirement of a written document as opposed to money, kesef, because after all, Rabbi Yosef Glili as well agrees and accepts the hekesh between avaya and yitzia. And just to give you one example of what we derive from that hekesh is halach of lishma. And that tells me that just like a get has to be written specifically on behalf of this man and for this woman, so too a shtar kedushin, that's one of the three methods by which you can marry a woman by giving her a shtar kedushin, has to be written lishma for the sake of this man who's marrying this woman. And you could probably come up with another 10 or I don't know how many different halachas that are derived from this hekesh havayilti. So it's fair to assume that Rabbi Yosef Glili likewise accepted the Hekesh between Avaya LeYetziah. And if that be the case, the Hava Mina is that just like the Torah says you can marry a woman with Kesef, so too we would think you could divorce a woman with Kesef. And the answer is Nafka Lemi Sefer Krisus. He doesn't need Vekasav law, which he expands the definition of materials that are valid for writing the get, but rather Sefer Krisus. And what do we derive from Sefer Krisus? Sefer Karsa. That you want to achieve the Krisus, which means the Gerishin, and you want to sever the relationship, you need a Sefer. And only a Sefer. Vi ein dover acher Karsa. But anything else other than a Sefer cannot effectuate Gerishin. So certainly you cannot give money as a Maisa Gerishin. Very interesting. The Gemara in Kiddushin, which Tosfos Divrei Masechta B'Ketziva quotes here, is of the opinion that the exclusion, or shall we call it the disqualification of Kesef for Gerushin, is a Svara. We don't need a Pasuk for that. And as far as Ein Sanegar Nasa Kategar, right, if the Kesef is coming to create a marriage relationship, a covenantal bris between a husband and a wife, it cannot be that that same object is now going to be a Kategar to break up that wonderful, loving relationship. So Tos wants to know, what does Abaye do with this pasuk of a Kosav law from which Chazal, according to Rabbanon, derived the exclusion of Kesef? If he, Abaye, derives the exclusion of Kesef from logic, from Svara. And Tosus says that according to Abaye, there was a Havamina, this all fascinates me a lot, that you can divorce a woman through chalitza. Chalitza is a ritual procedure which is appropriate for breaking up what's called a zikas yibum in the case of Yavama Lashuk. And there it's a kategor because it's breaking up a relationship. And we might think that chalitza likewise could break up the relationship between a husband and a wife. Tosfos Divrei Masechta Rabbanan asks the question, why does the Gemara ask, what do we need v'kasav law? According to Rabbanan, we need v'kasav law. Law means for her, and that's called lishma, that the get has to be written specifically in mind for the intention of this particular woman. Is afagav d'itzrich l'midrash v'kasav law lishma trei v'kasav law k'sivi? If you look in the parasha twice, the Torah says v'kasav law. Rabbanon, hi, Sefer Krisus. After all, Rabbi Yossi Agli derives from Sefer Krisus the exclusion of Kesef. So the Rabbanon, they needed Vekasav law to exclude Kesef. What are they going to do with Sefer Krisus? Mi boile ledovra kores beino leveino. Which means the following. That for a get to be valid, it's got to be a dovra kores. Kores means no strings attached. We are severing this relationship, and there will be no vestiges, so to speak, of the original marriage relationship. No strings that are attached to the apron. A total severance. And that's called Sefer Krisus. To the exclusion of what's called a t'nai, which means that we're going to invalidate a condition. Normally, if I enter into a transaction with you, I can set up various stipulations and conditions. We write up a contract. And I can say, you know what, this sale is valid if you will abstain from drinking wine, or if you refuse to visit the bad guy. You know, I don't want you visiting that bad guy. Don't go near him. I can make any condition, the sky's the limit, just be creative, be original. Not so in the case of get. Get is a unique transaction derived from the pasuk Sefer Krisus, Dovra Kores, Beino Veina. It completely severs the relationship. Kesanya, as we learned in a brisa, Reza Gitecha Menashe Lo Tishtei Yayin. I would impose upon you a restriction, a condition, stipulating that this get is only valid if you don't drink wine, or Al Menashe Lo Telchi LeBeis Avich. I don't want you visiting your father. And it depends. Did he say li'olam? Never ever will you drink wine. Never ever will you visit your father. Ein zeh krisus. Then the get is worth nothing. It's totally invalid. Unless you stipulate for a certain period of time, kol shloshim yom, for the next 30 days, don't drink wine or don't visit your father. Harei zeh krisus. Because then it's built into the get that there will be a krisus, albeit not now, but 30 days from now. So this get will be valid 30 days from now when it's a dovra kores beino leveino and there are no longer strings attached. So for the first 30 days, the get is, so to speak, suspended in air. It's nishtaher, nishtahin, it's not here and it's not there. But once that 30-day period is passed, the relationship has been severed, the get is chal, there are no strings attached. But if he says to her, from now until doomsday, you will not visit your father, you will not drink wine, the get is totally blown out of the water, it's invalid. For Rabbi Yossi Aglili, now wait a minute, he, Rabbi Yossi, used Sefer Krisus to derive the conclusion that ain dover acher kor, so that you can't give her money and validate, effectuate a get. So from whence did he derive that the krisus has to be dovra kores, and these conditions will complete, if they're liolam, right, they will completely torpedo the get. It's nafkale mi kores krisus. The Torah could have used the singular term, the nasala sefer hakores, and instead it uses krisus, which is a longer word, and that's coming to teach us that the kares, which means the severance, has to be a double severance, an absolute severance, with no strings attached. Rabbanan, kares krisus lo darash. They don't think that we have to derive any conclusions because it says krisus, because the word kares is not any better than the word krisus. On the contrary, the word krisus is a little bit clearer, because krisus it describes the entity or the enterprise of divorce, and we don't have to rack our brains to figure out what to derive from the word krisus as opposed to the word kares. So the bottom line of this entire sugya is we have machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbanu with only one nafkamina, and that is, can you write the get on an animal's back? Now, as far as food stuff is concerned, I'm not sure, but I intuitively suspect that even the Rabbanu will agree that a get on food is invalid. Let me just see for a moment if there's any footnote on that. Just 1 second. Ochel, eino ochel. No, I don't know. He just sort of skims over it. I don't know. Is there any tzion to the Shulchan Aruch, maybe? Let's just see. Okay, I'm not seeing anything right this minute. Yeah, that requires a little bit more research. Okay, Rabbo, so we're up to the next Mishnah here. And the Mishnah is going to deal with the case of Chanoya and Shayora. Okay, Shayora is like a caravan of people. And they're all encamped together on Shabbos. And there are no machitzos. there are no mechitzos that surround them. And now they're encamped, and they want to carry from one person to the other in this open area, which is not surrounded by mechitzas. And the question is, how do they do a tikkun? How do they set it up in such a way that they would be allowed to carry? Now, until now, we've been discussing in this chapter tikkune mavos, meaning of mavui. A mavui, if you recall, was surrounded by three mechitzos, complete mechitzos. It had a reshus hayochid status on a doraisa level. The chachamim say you're not allowed to carry until you do a tikkun. Our Mishnah now is not dealing with the halachas of a mavui, but rather with the laws of mechitzos, stam mechitzos, not for a mavui. And it's not the same, it's not identical as the laws that apply to the din of mechitzos that are required for tikkun mavui. So our Mishnah is going to explain that as far as a mechitza for a shus hayochid is concerned, we're going to activate the principle of omed meruba, and in the case, for example, of a mavui, we had a gemara back on Daf Heyamid Beis that if you want to be metake in the Pesach of a mavui with omed meruba, so the gemara tries to derive it with a kalachom from chotzer. Okay, now we're going to also talk in the Mishnah about a pirtza, which up if it's less than 10 amos, it was mutter. And with regard to a pirtza in a mavui, we had a machlokes back on the vav. Okay, fine. So without further ado, let's see what we can make out of this mission. Shayara, so we're talking about a group of people that are traveling and they set up their tents. He calls it a chabura. Shalanoshim Halchim Yachad Bamidbar. Shechonsa. So on Erev Shabbos they set up camp. Bibika. Bika is an open area, an open field. Now usually a bika is a carmelis. But I don't think that our mission is limited to a carmelis. The Mishnah is talking about a normal case where, you know, people are out there in the wild and they set up camp and the campsite is in a bika. So this field has no mechitzos. So in order to allow carrying within this encamped area, what they did was hikifua clay behema. They surrounded this entire field before Shabbos with a fence that was made of the utensils that are usually attached to an animal. He gives a couple of examples. It could go an ochafim, an ukaf is a saddle, okarim, or if you recall, we've discussed the question of putting cushions on the animal's back, cloths or pillows or things of that sort in order to keep the animal warm or to protect the animal from the friction of the saddle. And usually if you put these karim on the back of the animal, on top of the karim you would put the saddle, the ukaf. Now what we're going to try to figure out is why these clay behema can serve as mechitzos, because it says here in the Mishnah, metaltel and besocha, that now you're allowed to carry inside this bika. It must mean that you surrounded the area and closed it with mechitza. But again, this, it's a very interesting mechitza. It's made of saddles. And not only that, it's transitory. That's not a mechitza. See, he quotes the Meiri here that afal pisha eino kvua, shari kelim elu omdim li notel mikan liachas Shabbos. After Shabbos, you're going to take the saddle and the saddle cloth and so forth. Mikomakom ksherahi. So you can have a mechitza that's not kvua, that's not permanently a permanent partition. Ubilvad shiyehe goder gavoa asorat fochim. The minimum height of a mechitza to establish a rishus hayochid is 10 tfachim high. And not only that, v'lo yu pirtzos yiseros al abinyan. The pirtzos should not be greater than the omed, than that part that is standing. So for example, if let's say the total width of these pirtzos would be greater than the total size of the larger solid parts, then it would be an invalid mechitza. So we got the width of the solid parts, we got the width of the airspace, and we have to guarantee that the width of the solid parts exceeds the width of the airspace of the pirtza. Okay, so these are the two conditions which the Mishnah stipulates in order to create a mechitza. Then the Mishnah formulates a general rule, v'lo yu pirtzos yiseros al abinyan. Okay, that we saw, I'm sorry. Kol pirtzos shehi ke'eser amos muteres. Another din in mechitzos, in the halachas of mechitzos, if the pirtza is up to eser amos, that's how wide the pirtza is, but not beyond eser amos, mutaros. In other words, this is not going to pass the mechitza because the pirtza is less than 10 amos. Bipnei shehi kipesach. So we've discussed this on various occasions that something could be called a pirtza, or it could be called a pesach. And the determining factor is going to be 10 amos. If it's 10 amos or more, or let me put it the other way around, if it's more than 10 amos, 10 amos plus, then it's a pirtza. If it's 10 amos or less, then it's a pesach. Now he writes, we have omed merubah laparutz. Let's say, for example, the length of the mechitza is 25 amos, and the pirtza is 10 amos. So that would be omed merubah laparutz. Now, if you're talking about a pirtz of 10 amos, so that's derech b'nei odom lasos pesach eser amos. But ain't derech b'nei odom lasos pesach rochav yosem eser amos. And we're not talking here in this context about what's called a tzuras ha-pesach, but simply an open area. It's an entranceway that's parutz. And if it's more than 10 amos, that's not called a Pesach. You don't make a Pesach that's so wide. Now Rashi adds another point over here. Let's say you have pirtzos ktanos. So you have these small openings with airspace. Not one single Pesach is wider than 10 amos. But Rashi says, nevertheless, we will integrate all the different pirtzos, the ketanos, and betziruf kulon, if we add them all together, what you're ending up with is parutz merubah la'omed, then the mechitza is invalid. And finally, the Mishnah concludes, that yeser mikan osur, that if the width of the entranceway, or shall we say the opening between the, you know, the mechitza on the right, the mechitza, part of the mechitza on the left, is more than eser amos, then osur. That passes the whole mechitza, because then it's not a Pesach, but rather it is a pirtza. So you could have a situation where you have omed meruba ala parutz, but nevertheless, you have a pirtza that is greater than eser amos. So again, when we talk about parts merubala omei, then we could be mitzarif all the different openings, even though they're pirtzos ktanos. Nevertheless, if the sum total is meruba ala omei, then the mechitz is gone. Now let's take a case where it's omei meruba ala parts. So you have more of the solid standing for your mechitza, but at one particular point you have a pirtz of more than 10 amos, 10.001 amos. Is then you have a pirtza, and that completely disqualifies the status of the mechitza. That's what we have here in the Mishnah. Okay, then, so let's begin. Let's begin the Gemara now. And the Gemara says the following, Itmar parutz ki omeid. We have a machlokas about the status of 50-50. In other words, if the airspace total of this mechitza is exactly the same as the omeid, the part of the mechitza that's solid, well, papa and mutter, the mechitza still has the status of a valid mechitza. And Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua mar osur. Now, Rav Huna requires that it be omeid meruba, and Rav Papa passels when it's parts meruba. And then Afkamina is the case where it's parts ka omeid, and they're exactly equivalent. So the Gemara now explains the svar. Rav Papa mar mutar hechi hachi agmere rachman lemoshe. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, as far as the din of creating mechitzos. Lo tifrots ruba. You should not make a mechitza that's ruba parts. That's a mechitza that cannot be matir anything. So it means that the Torah, as it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu orally from Hashem, was passeling parts meruba. The implication is, if it's not parts meruba, but let's say it's chetziv chetziv, it's 50-50, it's parts and omed equal, then it's kosher. Rav Huna b'reid Yishomar also hachi igmerei rachmana l'moshe. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu teach Moshe at Har Sinai? Gadar ruba, gidar ruba. Take a mechitza that's mostly closed, that closes the area in its majority. If it's only 50-50 and it's not ruba, it's not a majority, then it's not a mechitza. Now, what I find extremely disturbing for me personally, I'm trying to figure out where I went wrong here, is how could there be a machlokes about what Hashem taught Moshe at Har Sinai? The Rambam says that when it comes to halacha l'Moshe miSinai, we have no controversies. You know, somebody today is going to say, well, I know that Priyei Tzadar is not an esrog, I know it's a lemon. And you'll throw him out on his, pardon the expression, on his tuchus. I mean, we don't question halacha l'Moshe miSinai. That's the one area of Torah and halacha that was never subject to machlokes. So if the dimensions, the requirements of mechitza were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, that should have the status of halacha l'Moshe miSinai. And yet we have machlokes, exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu teach Moshe, as our pup would have it, that don't make it parts meruba? Or did HaKadosh Baruch Hu convey to Moshe, as Rav Huna would have it, that you've got to guarantee that it's omed meruba? And again, I looked in my notes here that I have, and just don't find anything. And I you know, I'm wondering if anyone has anything to say about this that could a little bit calm me down. I mean, aren't we dealing with Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai? I don't know. If you come up with any answers, please send me an email. I don't know. Tanan, let's go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Lo yu pirtzos yiseros ala binyan. That you have to be very careful to make sure that the opening gaps and so forth in the mechitza are not greater than the solid part. Hakib binyan mutter. If the gaps would be equal to the solid part, that would be mechtzal mechtza, which is parts ke'omed, then it would be permitted to carry, meaning it would be a valid mechitza. And this is a solid proof for a papa that in a case where everything was equal, the parts and the meruba, the mechitza is fine. And the Mishnah only tells us, be careful to make sure that the pirtzos are not greater, they don't exceed beyond that of the binyan. So Mar rejects this and says, Lo tema, don't interpret the Mishnah as if the Mishnah saying is Ha binyan mutter, or Ka binyan mutter, that if it would be equal in size, it's mutter la'ema in binyan yeser, ala pirtza mutter. And what the Mishnah is really telling us is that the omed part, the binyan part, has to be yeser ala pirtza, and then it's mutter. Again, our Mishnah says, lo yu pirtzos yeseros ala binyan, that the pirtza shouldn't be greater than the binyan. But now, we're reinterpreting it, again, in order to defend Rav Huna, and we're saying that it means that if the binyan is yeser ala pirtza, then it's mutter. Amal ka binyan mai, but if let's say they were equal, what would be the status of this mechitza? Asur. And that's the way Rav Huna is interpreting our Mishnah. So the Gemara asks a kasha now. Ihochi, if you're right, listening, it should have said in the Mishnah, lo yu pirtzos ka binyan. That the pirtza should not be equal to the solid part. And instead, the Mishnah says, Lo yu pirtzos yesero sala binyan. It should have said ka binyan. That would have been a clearer way of formulating the Mishnah. Kasha. The Gemara says, this is difficult. Now we have a principle that if something is difficult, it's not a tyufta, it's not completely upshlug, and you got to rack your brains and come up with an answer. But in any event, it seems clear from the Mishnah that if a mechitza is equal in omed and meruba, it is still valid. And based on this, the Gemara is going to tell us, just giving us a little preview of what's coming around the bend, that we're going to paskin like Rav Papa. Okay. Toshma, let's quote a Mishnah now in Sukkah. On Daf Tes Vav, Hamekores Sukkaso Bishepudin O Baruchos Hamita. He covers his Sukkah with splits or the sides of a bed frame. And this is not Koshel Eschach, Im Yesh Revach Beinayim Kimosan Kshera. And we see from the word Kimosam that all you need is parts kimaruba. And this would be a clear-cut proof for Rav Chisda against Rav Huna. So let's just make a note of where we get up to here. If I don't write it down, I'll probably forget it. And we're on the bottom of Tesvav Amid Beis.